Today's Teisho will be on case 48 in the Mumonkan, the Umenkwan. Case 48, Kenpo's One Road. A monk said to Kenpo Osho, "It is written, Bhagavats in the 10 directions, one straight road to Nirvana. I still wonder where the road can be." Kenpo lifted his staff, drew a line, and said, "Here it is." Later, the monks asked the same question of Umong, who held up his fan and said, "This fan jumps up to the 33rd heaven and hits the nose of the deity Sakra Devanam Indra. When you strike the carp of the eastern sea, the rain comes down in torrents." Mumon's comment, "One going to the bottom of the sea lifts up clouds of dust. The other on top of the highest mountain raises towering waves to wash the sky. One holding fast, the other letting go. Each stretches out his hand to support the profound teaching. They are just like two riders starting from opposite ends of the course and meeting in the middle. But none on earth can be absolutely direct. When examined with a true eye, neither of these two great masters knows the road." Mumon's verse, "Before a step is taken, the goal is reached. Before the tongue is moved, the speech is finished. Though each move is ahead of the next, there is still a transcendent secret." First day of our winter sesshin, everybody has done a wonderful job. This morning the sitting in the Zendo was excellent, and I must say I'm especially impressed by the people who are here for the first time. Everybody here has had a first time, and I think everybody remembers it as very challenging. It's very impressive that those who are here for the first time have done such a fine job. Let me remind you that there are chairs over in the corner, and if you feel at some point that want a break, if your physical situation becomes overwhelming, there's no reason to let your pride get in the way. Just take the chair over, put it on your mat, and when you're ready to go back to the cushion, put the chair back in the corner and sit down. As I said last night, many people in this room have done that, and there's nothing wrong with that. The first sesshin is quite a demanding experience, you need to have a little compassion for yourself. I can remember my own first sesshin, and I've talked about it before. I guess nobody ever forgets it. But I hadn't been sitting very long. I had really only been sitting for a couple of weeks, and a person who was who is now the abbot of the Los Angeles Zen Center, a woman named Wendy Nakao, asked me if I wanted to go to sesshin. And I was rather naive about sesshin. I didn't know enough about Zen to know that this was going to be demanding. And I was very enthusiastic. Sure, sesshin, that sounds great, And then when I got to sesshin, it began to dawn on me what I had gotten myself into. At that time, Genki Roshi had just come from Japan, and this was his first sesshin, and he hadn't really had any experience of Americans and American practitioners of Zen. He had trained in a monastery, and in Japan, pretty much everybody, there are lay people who practice Zen, but Most of the people who practice Zen are training to be monks, or they are monks. And Genki just ran the sesshin as though it were sesshin at Daitokuji or something, or one of the other temples where he had trained. So we started out with something like 50-minute sits. And I remember that the person who was in charge of the Zen hall, the Jikijitsu, was named Glenn Hirschman. And I remember he came in and his face looked a little bit pale, and he said, Genki Roshi has said that we will have 50-minute sits. And you could see everybody's face just, flatten out. And it didn't last very long. Really, that was beyond our abilities. And about one day into the sesshin, we decided that, or Genki decided that it would be better if we went to 30-minute sits. But I have to tell you the truth, whether the sits are 50 minutes or 30 minutes or 10 minutes, for me, they were very hard. And after a while, it was a big blur. I just got on my cushion, sat, and tried to get through the sit. And I remember going in to see Genki Roshi in Dokusan and just feeling like I was going to crawl into Dokusan because my legs were so sore. I'm so glad I stayed at that sesshin. I stayed through the sesshin. I must say that I love sesshin, and that if you hang in there long enough, this becomes the most wonderful thing in the world. Really incomparable experience. To come to this sesshin, to a sesshin, and practice like this is just amazing. At first, people don't appreciate it because it's so overwhelming, but little by little, what happens if you come to sesshin is that you begin to let go of all the inessentials, all the things that aren't so important. We have a culture where we surround ourselves with inessentials. We say, I have to hear the news. It's 5 o'clock, I've got to hear my NPR. Or I've got 6 o'clock, I must hear the news. Or, I can't go without my cup of coffee in the morning. Or, whatever we think. And, all of these things are actually inessential. But we build them into our lives and we hold on to them, sometimes because they're diverting. They fill up the time, they fill up the empty time. Sometimes because we have certain kinds of psychological needs. But we begin to ritualize our lives in complex ways, and a daily life becomes a kind of a series of rituals that involve things we must have or must do. And we often find, when we live this way, that there's a sort of chronic shortage of energy in our lives. This is very interesting, but many, if you go to the bookstores, you'll often see that there's many, many books on healing and self-healing. And if you came from another culture, you might think this was sort of strange, because Americans have a very long life expectancy. Actually, we have a life expectancy over 70 years. The Japanese have the longest life expectancy, I think, right now. But Americans are doing pretty well. We have a pretty long life expectancy. And this is in spite of many problems. So it's sort of curious that people are so interested in healing. If you follow certain circles, healing workshops are very popular. And it's odd, because people really aren't that unhealthy. But what I think is going on is that people feel unhealthy, and that people often have a sort of chronic loss or chronic lack of energy. People feel tired a lot of time. I was just at work the other day, and one of my coworkers was just complaining about feeling tired, and And she didn't know why. She wasn't sick, you know. And so, of course, when we're sick, we get tired. But I think a lot of people feel chronically tired, chronically no energy. And part of this, I think, is the way we live our lives. You know, we create these structures that are quite artificial. And it's like obsessive compulsive disorder. My sister-in-law has a obsessive compulsive disorder and has worked very hard to get it under control. It's not a severe case, but when I was much younger, I remember I would be sitting in the living room and I would see my sister-in-law, whose name is Chris, come through a door. And if she didn't think anyone was looking at you, she would go through the door and then she'd step back and go through the door a second time. And this is quite common, this OCD is quite common. You may have heard of this problem, but people who have it feel that they have to do certain things or bad things are going to happen. My sister-in-law, Chris, eventually did go to somebody who helped her, and she began to break some of these patterns. Maybe this is neurological. There might be some chemical reason that some people are like this also. But if you think about it, people are often sort of OCD, even quote-unquote normal people or healthy people. We surround ourselves with these rituals and these structures that we must have or must do. And if you watch your mind all day long, you're sort of moving from one must have, must do to another. I have a friend of mine who is a very nice guy, but he became very upset when somebody in our department rearranged the furniture in the teacher's lounge. And he felt really as though his world was turned upside down. It was the strangest thing. He said to the new chairman of our department, you've wrecked my haven or my special place. You've wrecked it." The chairman thought it was a joke at first, and then he realized that this person was half serious or was jokingly serious. Just moving around the furniture had become very disabling for this person, very disorienting. But we're all like that, you know. We all build these structures and rituals and things we must have, and we sort of see them as bridges getting us through the tough times, or getting us through the afternoon, getting us through the morning, getting us through the evening, you know. And these things seem so essential. But actually, we spend a tremendous amount of energy maintaining these little rituals and constantly checking, making sure that the furniture's in the right place and that the coffee's the right temperature, it has this and that in it. And we spend a great deal of energy doing this. And it's because I think this is sort of like a defense mechanism. You know, this sort of ritualizing of life becomes a kind of defense mechanism. And basically, when we come to the Zen Sesshin, we have a real chance to break out of that. Because things are very spare and simple here. You know, we get up, we sit on the cushion, we have meals. The meals may or may not be what you want, what you expect. You may not be getting enough sleep, may not be getting enough to eat. All of the comfort factors are sort of tossed out the window. And it can be terribly disconcerting for a little while. But what will eventually happen if you just hang in there is that sooner or later you're going to feel better. and maybe a lot better. You know, when we don't have to have all the things we really need, when we stop holding on so tightly to all the things we really need, it can sometimes be the case that we feel much more alive. You know, one of my favorite stories is when I was much younger, I was very much a fan of Leo Tolstoy. And I really did enjoy War and Peace. When I was in college, there was a television version of War and Peace that was put on by British Television and played in the United States. And all of my friends and I used to watch it every week at our house in college. And we would try to keep up reading War and Peace in advance of the show. And it really brought the novel to life for me. It really made it wonderful. And I won't go into the whole thing because I only have an hour for the Taisho. But the main character is a young man whose father, he was an illegitimate son of one of the richest men in Russia. And when his father dies, this young man inherits a huge fortune. And he actually is quite unhappy, because the more involved he gets with this money, the more he becomes a prisoner of social conventions, other kinds of ritualized behaviors, and becomes very unhappy. Well, at any rate, in the middle of all of this, Napoleon decides to invade Russia. And when he comes into Moscow, he truly wrecks the city. Everybody has to evacuate, and the young man, Prince Bezukhov, really winds up living like a peasant. And he just has to worry about getting up, getting enough to eat, and staying alive through the day. And he's befriended by this peasant who can't read or write. He isn't, you know, a fascinating person, just an ordinary peasant. But he has real joy in life, great joy. And Prince Bezukhov begins to notice this about the man. The man has, you know, holes in his shoes and no prospects for the future. And, you know, it's a kind of life that we would find intolerable, you know, absolutely intolerable. And he can't do anything about it. You know, he can't improve his situation. That door is closed for him. But he's found a way to be happy, you know, tremendously happy, simply by living in the moment. And this is the great lesson at the center of the book, is that, you know, just living in the moment is the path to real happiness, real joy. It has nothing to do with success or failure. It has nothing to do with striving or not striving. It has nothing to do, actually, with, you know, even though I often talk about Zen practice as a purifying practice, and it is, real awakened awareness has nothing to do with the pure and the impure. All of those are merely distinctions. They're merely upaya, merely skillful means designed to lead people beyond these distinctions. Just being in the moment, if you can really just be in the moment, real joy automatically comes. It's amazing. And that's what Prince Bezukhov, this young Prince Bezukhov, discovers in War and Peace. That basically, when he had nothing, he was very happy. You know, there's this. Tolstoy was very influenced by Eastern thought. Tolstoy was very much aware of Eastern thinking and was very moved by it. And the story he tells is very much a typical story that might have come out of India or China or Japan. You know, Xu Yun, the great 20th century Chinese Zen master, tells a story about the emperor, the last emperor of China. And this was a man who had many, many dishes were always prepared for him at every meal, like more than he could possibly eat. And this was a ritual display of honor to the emperor. He would prepare so many meals, so much food that he couldn't eat it all. And this was saying many things about the emperor, many things about China, many things about the appropriate way that the state was supposed to be run. And at one point, the Western powers had invaded China, and the emperor had to flee. Basically, when he was fleeing, it was a very desperate situation. And while he was traveling, he was actually staying in very humble settings. And one night, some people brought him sweet potato greens. And he had never eaten this. This is like pig food in China, sweet potato greens. And he ate it, and it was delicious. It was absolutely delicious. Well, this was the time when he was sleeping in very humble huts, in barns, running for his life. Later, he was restored to power, was back in his villa, and he asked for the sweet potato greens again. When he ate them, he thought they didn't taste very good. See, he had returned to his old way of life and his old habits and making these distinctions. You know, when we're really in the moment, all of those distinctions fall away and we can have this experience of life that is so wonderful. So wonderful. That's what Zen is all about. So this is the first day of Sesshin, and I know that it's very difficult for those of you who are just starting out. And I want to tell you a little secret, you know. If you think about the Sesshin as 5 days long, you will probably make yourself very uncomfortable. You know, one of the ways to drive yourself crazy at a Sesshin is to think, okay, we have one more sit until lunch, and then 4 hours until dinner, and you know, counting the time. And then you get up each day and go, okay, it's day two. 4 more days, 3 more days, 2 more days. And this exacerbates the difficulty of the practice. You know, you don't have to get through 5 days. That is not true. That's a mental fantasy. Actually, all you have to do is to get through your next breath. See, and the time will fly by miraculously if you can just live in your next breath. See, you just have to get from the beginning of this exhalation to the end. And then the world is over, and you can start again. And each time you immerse yourself in the moment and see it from start to finish, you will find this tremendous sense of energy. If you're squeezing your breath out with your hara, with your dantian, you squeeze the breath out. If your mind is really in the breath, if you're totally present in the breath, you'll find that you disappear into the breath. The breath goes out, 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 and you disappear. And at that moment, pain disappears too. This is absolutely true, absolutely guaranteed. Follow the breath out, and you'll find that as you ride the breath out, if you go with the breath, it will take you to a place that's very still and quiet and calm, and there's no pain in that place. Now, we can only sustain concentration initially for a very brief period of time. We draw the breath, we inhale, and the thoughts come rushing back in, and of course pain returns. But the secret of sesshin is just taking it one breath at a time. So you exhale, the breath goes out, 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 out. That's all you have to do. It's just living life one breath at a time. That's the secret, not just to sesshin, that's the secret to real joy. And as soon as we begin to pass judgment, we are out of the moment. We're looking back at the moment and evaluating the moment. See, this is a part of human consciousness, to have a moment and then to assess it. And, you know, it's inevitably the case that we do this unless we have great mental discipline. So the practice of Zen is not allowing ourselves to dwell on retrospection and comparison and contrast and so on. We just keep pushing the mind into the moment and staying with the moment until it's gone, and then we turn our attention to the next moment, the next breath. We don't give ourselves the luxury of passing judgment or making decisions or assessments of what has just happened. As soon as that inner dialogue begins, you will have discomfort. So the art of Zen practice is simply being in the moment from one moment to the next and not allowing introspection or retrospection to arise. If you keep pulling your mind back to the breath, there won't be very much space between one breath and another. And the art of Zen involves not allowing those vines of retrospection and introspection to take root in your mind. You keep watching the breath go out, 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 out. It's gone, then next breath. And you watch it go out. And don't give thoughts, don't give judgments any place to plant their roots. Just keep turning your mind back to the present moment. This is how we overcome our difficulties. Now the truth is that for beginners this is very tiring. So we have rest periods between the sits, and I strongly urge you to use them. Even if you're not a beginner, when you're finished a sit, if you have a rest period, you should go in and rest. Probably you'll find you go to sleep. And it's funny, you know, we're not doing anything, we're not chopping wood, but you may find you're very tired. And it's because this mental concentration is really quite strenuous, at first, anyway. So, focus on the breath, 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 breath. And little by little you'll find that your pain diminishes. It takes a while. And you'll find that sometimes you just are too tired to keep focusing. This is only human. You know, if the practice becomes too difficult, you know, you're beginning to just be in pain, you can adjust your posture, and if you want to sit in a chair, that's perfectly okay. You know, when you sit in a chair, watch your breath, stay in the present moment. Eventually you'll feel ready to return to the cushion. So nobody's going to judge you if you sit in the chair. That's not a sign of defeat. It's a signal of your determination to continue. And so it's a noble, noble action. Kenpo's One Road. A monk said to Kenpo Osho, it is written, Bhagavats in the 10 directions. In other words, in every direction there are these Bhagavats, these Buddhas. They're found in all directions. One, but we say Bhagavats in the 10 directions, but one road leads to nirvana. See, there's 10 directions. Which is the right direction for me to take? This is what we think about all the time on the cushion. We think, how can I get out of my pain? What can I do? You know, so we adjust posture. Your knees hurt? Of course they hurt. So you try to adjust your posture. And it might work and it might not. Sometimes you'll notice people who have gotten the idea that by shifting their posture they can solve their problems. You don't see it usually at sesshin, but you'll sometimes see it on sits at the university or Princeton or elsewhere. Somebody will be shifting and shifting and shifting and shifting. And that strategy doesn't work, but they're trying to find a position that will be satisfying to them. That's an elementary problem. But advanced people do the same thing, you know. You sit on the cushion and think, what should I be doing? How should I be answering my koan? You know, what about if I do this? What about if I do that? In a certain way, that's also an incorrect practice. You know, that's also passing judgment, trying to improve your circumstances, trying to get the better of your koan, trying to win, trying to achieve. If you don't answer your koan, you might feel like a big failure, like a big flop. If you answer your koan, you'll feel like a real hero, like a winner. But the truth is, there are really no such thing as winners or losers. And in a certain sense, there is no such thing as failing to answer your koan. The question is, right here and now, can you become your koan with your whole being? Put aside this issue of whether or not there's an answer or a resolution and just be the koan. Then nothing can go wrong. Whatever is happening at this moment is absolutely the right road. If you embrace the moment. So yes, there are Buddhas in the 10 directions, but always one straight road leads to nirvana. What is that road? It's this breath. It's this moment. I still wonder where that road can be. Kenpo lifted his staff, drew a line and said, it's right here, right here. This is the road. This is the one road. So, you know, this is a wonderful koan. This would be the kind of koan a teacher would give to somebody who's having a terrible time in life. You know, one of our members just talking to me about some problems he has had with the changing job situation. This is a person who started his career as an engineer, and when manufacturing began to leave the United States, he shifted over to IT work, programming work. And then later, or you might have noticed that IT work is leaving the United States. So this person is 50-some years old, has changed jobs already once, and is afraid that his company's going to close his job down. That's hard. That's a hard moment to be in. This is the kind of koan that would be perfect for somebody like that, you know. One road. You know, where do I go next? What do I do? The more you think about it, the more paralyzing it becomes. What you have to do is simply embrace the moment. That's the only solution. So today is day one of Sesshin, and everybody's a beginner on day one. In a certain sense, everybody's in the same situation. Everybody's legs hurt, everybody's tired, getting tired. And for everybody, the practice is the same. You know, the only solution, only way to get through this is to give up trying to control the situation. Give up trying to win, give up trying to be comfortable, give up trying to be even liberated. Just be in the moment. Whatever it is truly Buddha. And you can't discover that unless you enter this mind of no judgment. Breath, breath, breath. And if you can truly be in that mind, you know, even your pain won't bother you. It's just pain. It's just cold. It's just being tired. Isn't that wonderful to be in pain? Isn't it wonderful to be cold? Isn't it wonderful to be tired? This is like in ancient Buddhist scriptures, this is called the wish-fulfilling gem. If you can enter true samadhi, true wuxin, everything is transformed. What is poison becomes delicious food. What is the source of your unhappiness becomes this source of tremendous joy. So this is our practice. Being in the moment, no judgment. Give up trying to win. Give up trying to succeed. Give up trying to escape. All you have to do is be in this moment. Everything will be clarified for you. And you'll have a wonderful, wonderful sesshin. I promise. It took me a long time to discover this. And I was always a slow learner. But if you do this right now on the cushion, you know, you won't have to go for years to learn the lesson. You can learn it, you can discover it right now. So I hope you will. Mumon's comment. One goes to the bottom of the sea and lifts up clouds of dust. The other, on top of the highest mountain, raises towering waves to wash the sky. One holds fast, the other lets go. Each stretches out his hand to support the profound teaching. If you just unify yourself with the moment, you will know how to answer your koan. You will know what to do. They are like the two riders starting from opposite ends of the course and meeting in the middle. Before a step is taken, the goal is already reached. This moment is the goal. Before the tongue is moved, the speech is already finished. Though each move is ahead of the next, there is still a transcendent secret. I'll let you find it for yourself. Everybody has done a wonderful job on this first day. Please be in the moment. Please be in the moment. And there's nothing you can't accomplish. Even Kensha is a possibility. You know, I've often talked about this woman who was quite a phenomenon in Japan. She went to Japan and she had Kensho in 1 year. An Irish-American woman, and she didn't know she couldn't have Kensho in a year. Yes, that is, you know, she didn't have expectations. She just sat. Her teacher, was a teacher named Go Roshi, and he would just say, oh, listen, I want you to sit all night tonight. And she would do it, you know. And she would, she would just do it. And she'd come in and say, well, I did that. And he'd say, well, tell me what's happening. Excellent. Now I want you to do this. She didn't know she couldn't do it. You know, there's a wonderful, I love this scene in Bugs Bunny cartoon, you know, where basically a dog is chasing Bugs Bunny and they run over the cliff, right? But they keep going and they're running in thin air, right? You know, neither one of them are troubled by this, and then Bugs stops the dog and says, "Look down," you know, and the dog looks down and falls. But it's just like that, you know. Don't make any judgments about what you can and cannot do, what you can and cannot bear. You know, all of this is just an illusion. You know, even Kensho itself is right here. The only thing that stops us is our expectation that it's very far away, very special, very distant. If you just unify yourself with a moment, it's right here. It could happen today. It could happen day one of Sesshin. There's no question about it. So, please practice with your whole heart.